Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment.
Since 1966, the nonprofit Continuum of Care has been serving adults diagnosed with mental illness and severe developmental and intellectual disabilities. The agency is preparing for its holiday bazaar that's going to help fund a brand new and comprehensive program that'll save taxpayers millions in costs to otherwise address homeless individuals who are diagnosed with one or more of these issues. So stay tuned and find out how you can help. Then we're bringing in the Managing Director of Public and Government Affairs for AAA Northeast to get you up to speed on issues from pedestrian and operator safety post-daylight savings to a new addition to our slow down move over law, a new EV pilot program, and what you need to know if you'll be traveling this Thanksgiving season. And we're going to close replaying part of a spring series focusing on United Way of Western Connecticut and its partnership with Nuvance Health on an innovative food pharmacy, which is celebrating its grand opening here in early November. This community-based site is designed to increase access to healthful foods for folks diagnosed with obesity, heart disease, diabetes, and/or hypertension. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. National Adoption Month is a November observance designed to raise awareness about the critical need for adoptive families for children and youth in foster care. While we'll be talking about this effort in depth next weekend on the show, if supporting one or more of our local children in crisis is something you'd like to do, please reach out to Wheeler. In Connecticut, on any given day, there are more than 3,800 youth in foster care and hundreds more who need loving homes. For more information, you can call 860-793-7277 or just go to the foster care program at wheelerclinic.org. Well, we're pleased to open up the program this morning with our friends at Continuum of Care. You've been hearing about this organization over many of the past years here on the award-winning For the People, since they have been serving this region since 1966. Continuum of Care is a not-for-profit organization that's serving adults diagnosed with mental illness like depression, schizophrenia, bipolar disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, as well as PTSD and others, or severe developmental or intellectual disabilities, like folks on the autism spectrum, or those that suffered traumatic brain injury or seizure disorders. We're pleased to have on the program this morning two representatives from Continuum of Care. Deborah Cox is with us and has been working hard to help set up this call. She is the Vice President of Development and Marketing, and John Labanek is Vice President of Acute Services. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Who gets to give us more about what Continuum of Care is all about these many decades?
I think you did a great job. You know, as you said, we serve individuals. For 58 years, we've been serving individuals with mental illness and developmental disabilities and co-occurring substance use disorder, as well as homelessness. And we do this by providing housing and therapy, case management, crisis intervention, and other services that truly help individuals rebuild their lives, transform them, and so that they can live as independently in the community as possible. We have about 60 locations around Connecticut. We started with one house 58 years ago, and now we're, you know, blossomed to 60, and we serve about 2,000 people per year.
Diverting a little bit from the conversation map here, Deborah, I wanted to talk a little bit about how Continuum of Care not only has continued and grown in serving the communities we are discussing, but also have worked really hard in building a team that's staying on the cutting edge of developments in the care and support of these various communities. You guys may have started your work almost 60 years ago, but you're looking to present day and the future to make sure that your entire team is right on top of the most recent developments and research and science in regarding the people that you serve.
I think that's true, and I think John is a perfect person to take that one on. He's done amazing work in the community. John, why don't you talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, we've been fortunate enough, and it's kind of a very exciting time to be part of that change that's going on within our crisis service system. We've opened up a lot of new programs that are specific to the crisis response system with the Compass program, working with police. We have a crisis stabilization and receiving center opening up, and we're also going to be opening up a non-congregate housing, emergency housing program. So these are all changes within our system that just offer something unique and different that's going to help the people that we service. So it's very exciting. It's well put. Thank you for saying it like that.
Yeah. I think the last time we actually were talking about continuum of care on the program was just as that Compass program was launching, putting knowledgeable and responsive social workers and trained responders out to calls where they might normally just create a police response. And this is a growing movement. I mean, I'm hearing about it happening in places from New Jersey to Colorado. More and more major cities like New Haven are partnering with organizations like yours and are even in lieu of sending police, they're sending teams like yours along with EMS or paramedics out when calls that may not really require police response, but however might end up resulting in some sort of police action are dialed in.
Yep, correct. And that has been really working wonderfully. It's expanded, and you're absolutely right. I mean, you know, there's individuals that we service that end up in crisis and end up homeless. And what we've been seeing and learning is a lot of these folks just need to be connected to the right services. And part of these two new programs that are coming online is going to help that team with access to the right places so that we can get individuals to where they need to be.
And the other program that we want to talk about, which is going to be one of the major beneficiaries of your upcoming holiday bazaar on December 2nd, is the emergency housing program on Fox and Boulevard in New Haven. Let's talk a little bit about that, and then we'll let people know how they can come up to help support it.
Yeah, the you know, myself, I'm a social worker, and I'm part of the continuum team, but I'm also a person with my own lived experience, and I think so much depends when you talk about the shelter system. So much depends on how individuals are treated, you know, the environment they're staying in, and what we're going to be doing is, you know, it's not going to be a cot and a can of SpaghettiOs and good luck. We're going to be offering genuine compassion, allowing folks to have their own space, their own room, being able to sleep in a bed with a frame, sheets, and a comforter, all the kind of things that we sometimes take for granted. Our system is sometimes, it feels designed to work against us with the barriers and obstacles that come along with that. And I think what's important is providing these things, but also taking the time to hear someone's story. It gives you insight and what they've been through and what they might need. And I think that's what's going to make this really different.
Yeah, so many communities and nonprofits are trying to grapple with homelessness, especially youth homelessness and homelessness among our LGBTQ plus populations, by putting kind of a cork in the leaky boat where this program sounds like, instead of it being a shelter that has pamphlets and maybe one trained representative referring people out to programs, it's actually a full umbrella program that includes a shelter.
Well, it includes a nice warm environment to sleep in. And because of the array of services we offer, we can have a clinician on site. We can have case managers, and the majority of the staff we're looking to hire and recruit are people with their own lived experience. I think we offer a kind of an expertise in the human experience and understanding the broad spectrum of needs that that goes along with homelessness. And it's all about finding the appropriate resources. I think traditional shelters, they're historically underfunded. They operate like institutional settings. It's a cold environment, and it's a gymnasium, and it feels like survival of the fittest. Mm. So this is going to be something the complete opposite, that provides the support and as well as the services to get people to connected to where they need to go, where they'll be the most successful.
Yeah. And aside from expertise, there are three other critical important points to make, including time, because some of these municipal shelters, they open up at 4 or 5 o'clock, and like you said, produce the equivalent. And in no way is this, meant to be, demeaning. But I mean, giving them, like you said, a can of SpaghettiOs or some hot meal, a place to sleep in a cubicle, or like you said, in a gymnasium setting, and then in the morning the bell goes off and they're back out on the street. There's a time component to what you're hoping to do out on Foxen Road, right?
Yeah, people, the staff are going to be there 24/7, so people don't have to leave during the day. As people are coming in, we'll have the opportunity to do our own triage and a proper assessment, and get to understand the complex needs that people have, and allowing them to be on site and to get all those services where they're living temporarily.
Yeah, and they're welcome to stay a little bit longer than just overnight, one night, right?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. The average length of stay would be probably between 60 and 90 days. We found with operating different short-term crisis programs that it's all about finding the right services and getting people to the right place, establishing trust, a connection, rapport. It can't be treated like a conveyor belt or machine shop where everything just falls into line and everyone falls into place. I think when you talk about human connection, you get to know and understand someone's story.
Yeah. And while it's critical that you're providing this trauma-informed approach to every individual that you intake, the output will hopefully be into some sort of a permanent housing situation, right?
Yes, absolutely. It's a housing-focused approach. And, there's a lot of research, with these non-congregate models that have come to be after the pandemic, that a stable, welcoming environment, people actually do better. They get housed quicker. They access services. They even welcome the assistance. And it's like, what a concept, right? When one has a place to call home, they spend less time in the hospitals and in the shelters or in police custody, which costs, an enormous amount of money. And I think by taking 10 people in finding 10 appropriate housing situations, you can save the community up to $600,000 a year.
Sure. Even the bigger number, John, is this $6 million in savings just by helping around 100 individuals each year. When people say, you know, part of the stigma is this, you know, money for nothing, you know, it's going to cost me, you know, to help somebody. They just need to get a job or get their life straightened out. The old pull themselves up by their bootstraps fallacy. But man, when you talk about saving approximately $6 million in public cost out of taxpayers' pockets for helping around 100 individuals, that's a fact that you can't turn your back on.
You really can't, and it's doing it the right way, you know, taking a more trauma-informed approach. Because homelessness itself is traumatizing. You know, stigma is traumatizing. And I think, you know, as a service provider that's been around as long as we have, we understand that. And, you know, with hiring, we have a big peer program within our agency. You know, we understand it.
And you also have the expertise to be able to recognize the subtle differences in what may be troubling certain individuals that come under Continuum's care. You have this ability to triage and properly assess these individuals, so you can then connect them all under the umbrella of Continuum to the acute supports that they might need to fast track themselves, not only into some sort of permanent housing situation, but a life's transformation.
Yeah. With the supports included, if people want them and need them. We've gotten quite a reputation for just not believing in a quote-unquote discharge. You know, the door's always open. We're always here to help. I think that makes a big difference for people.
Yeah, and for the services or supports you can't solely provide as Continuum, you have amassed a spectacular array of partnerships.
Yeah, and that's what it's all about. I'm glad you bring that up, because we can't do it alone, and we shouldn't do it alone. We need to partner with all of our providers, and we currently, you know, partner with the City of New Haven, the Community Access Network, Yale New Haven Hospital, the Police Department, different landlords, different outpatient clinics. You know, New Haven is pretty rich in resources, and if we all come together and share those resources, they'll be turning nobody away, you know, and that's how it works. And that's what I've certainly learned in terms of operating our crisis programs, that, you know, when you partner with the right people, you get people in the right spot, and you're more apt to be successful.
Great.
And you have a place to go if things don't work,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, for anybody that wants to help Continuum of Care get off on the right foot while at the same time saving taxpayers in our communities over $6 million for the first 100 individuals that will be helped by this new organization that Continuum is working to find, this housing program on Fox and Boulevard, we invite you to go and meet them in their own home, at their own facility, for this upcoming holiday bazaar in New Haven on December 2nd. So in the last couple of minutes that we have, let's hear about that and let folks know how to find out more about Continuum of Care.
Great. Deborah, do you want to take that?
Sure. The bazaar is actually a fundraiser. It's free to get in, and there's free parking. As John said, it's on December 2nd from 10 until 4. And the parking is located at 249 Legion Avenue in New Haven. And you just walk down half a block to the facility, which is at 109 Legion Avenue. But it's all on our website to learn more about the parking. But then once you get in, there's 30 vendors. They'll be selling their crafts and wares on 3 floors. There's activities for children. There's a pizza truck right outside. And the activities for children is free. And it's just a wonderful event. It's our fourth year doing it. And this year is specifically raising money for the new program. The people that it will benefit, they have nothing. I mean, that's the whole point. They have nothing. They don't have food, clothing, and so this is to augment the funding that we already have to provide that food, clothing, assessment services, clinical services, You know, and it's, you know, it's constant, a constant need. So that the fundraiser will directly benefit those individuals. And we're really excited about that opportunity. We're so excited about this program. So we think it's going to be, you know, a lot of enthusiasm, the people coming in.
Good. Sinking their roots in the greater New Haven community in 1966 and now serving virtually the entire state of Connecticut in some way. Continuum of Care is a nonprofit serving adults diagnosed with mental illness or severe developmental and intellectual disabilities. You can find out more about the December 2nd Bazaar and all of the services they offer in hopes that you will support them at their website, continuumct.org. That's continuumct.org. Our guests this morning are John Labanek and Deborah Cox, representing that organization in a very worthy way. Thank you, guys. Good luck with the Christmas Bazaar and all of the programs you're holding now or are scheduled to begin in the near future. Good luck. Well, AAA is a lot more than a toe, and we're here to tell you, well, not me, Alex Lackey is with us. He is with AAA Northeast. He's the Managing Director for Public and Government Affairs for AAA Northeast, and his, I believe, first appearance on the award-winning For the People. We bid fond farewell to his predecessor at some point a couple of months ago. We were sorry to... part ways with our old friend Fran Mako, but she has served as a great resource here on the program. And as you will soon find out, Alec is a worthy newcomer and full of great information, timely today and timely all through the winter months. So stick with us for the next 15 minutes, and I trust you will be a safer driver on the road, and your the vehicles that you're driving in will also serve you better. Alec, how you doing?
I'm doing well. Thanks for that wonderful introduction.
Oh, no problem. You have small shoes to fill, but only because she was a size six. So, yeah, this is great. We had Connecticut DOT on a few weeks ago, among other things, talking about, you know, autumn travel safety ahead of daylight savings time. But now here we are, you know, as we record this, we're just about a week into, and certainly, you know, as the show plays on Sunday morning, we're a week into the fall back, a little bit brighter earlier, a little bit darker later in the day. Tell me a little bit about what you and AAA Northeast is trying to communicate to people in these weeks following daylight savings change.
We know, unfortunately, it gets a lot more dangerous in the afternoon specifically when we look at 5 to 6 p.m. So right in that p.m. commute, gets a lot more dangerous on the road. So we're seeing a big increase in crashes overall, and especially a big increase in crashes for pedestrians. And it's really concentrated in that 5 to 6 p.m. hour. And, you know, there's maybe a few reasons for it. It could be because people are getting drowsy earlier, even though, you know, we got an extra hour for fall back, but it messes with people's sleep schedules. So
yeah, that's the irony of the fall earlier. Back, right?
It's funny, you know, I always long for that extra hour. And then after I get it, I definitely feel a little bit different. Whereas for spring ahead, I feel like I'm able to bounce back a little bit more quickly. And, you know, I don't know if that's something that's just me or that's common to everyone, but it is definitely not what we would expect. That's why it's so important that, I mean, drowsy driving is a big problem at all times. But we know, especially during daylight saving time, when you're driving home and, you know, you have the extra drowsiness and you have unexpected darkness when people have been used to driving that hour and it's been light for months and months and months, and all of a sudden it's pitch black. I mean, it's kind of it's depressing when you leave work and there's no light out, and it's also more dangerous. And we know you got to make sure your car is in good working order. So keep your windshield clean, make sure the lights are in a good state of repair and restored if they need to be. But also just the general safe driving tips that we give at all times, they're especially important now. So keep your speed relatively slow. You know, you keep your following distance pretty large. So stay a good chunk behind the car that's in front of you or a motorcycle, especially if it's rainy or foggy or anything like that. And you know what I always say for that is, you know, we live in an area where if you give a lot of space between you and the car in front of you, someone is probably going to fill that space and they're going to go in front of you. And you say, you know what, that's fine. Let them do it. Drive your own trip. It's better to get home safe than get home, you know, 20 seconds faster. So definitely make sure you're driving safely at all times, but especially during those PM commutes in November, December.
So if from a pedestrian standpoint, unless you absolutely have to, over the next few weeks, say up until or a little after Thanksgiving, you definitely want to avoid being out and proximate to vehicular traffic if at all possible. So if your normal kind of jogging route or cycling route or your walk to or from the bus stop may take you along vehicle roadways, and there may be an alternate route. There is a statistical probability that it will be safer if you either stay further away from the roadway if possible, or take an alternate, or don't even go.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair, and I hate to tell people not to go for sure. But unfortunately, you know, the way our road safety environment is, I know myself as a pedestrian, when I'm out there, or same thing as a bicyclist, as any sort of what we call vulnerable road user. If I'm out there, I'm assuming every car is going to make the move that's posing the most danger to me. Mm-hmm. So I'm assuming every car is out there to kill me. And obviously they're not, but you got to do that to make sure that you keep yourself safe. And I do the same when I'm driving, right? You got to assume that every car is going to make the most dangerous move. So if you can go out where it is, you know, a little bit more light out, and whether that's street lights or obviously natural light, I think that's great. So I don't want to tell folks not to do anything,
sure,
but
of course,
definitely be on higher alert. And we, you know, that's why we're also encouraging municipalities to invest in sidewalks and street lights. And sure, I know sometimes those things can be, you know, expensive, or, you know, sidewalks can sometimes be controversial, but
right.
You know, they're critical for safety.
Yeah. And it can't hurt to wear, you know, something, if not a reflective vest or even something that has some sort of bright or strobing light on it. At least don't wear all black or dark colored clothing. That may be another factor for another conversation. But certainly it doesn't take a change in daylight savings time or a change in the season to put our emergency responders, including our tow and wrecker operators, at risk. And that was the reason why back just about a month ago, there was at least a statewide, if not a nation or region-wide, slow down, move over challenge.
Yeah, that's right. And thanks for bringing that up, because that's always something that's a top priority for us, is making sure that our tow operators are safe out there on the road. They got a tough job, and they're there to help you. And we certainly say the same about all the DOT construction workers, the police officers, firefighters, EMTs, folks working for the utility companies. You know, they're out there to keep our roads safe and keep our, you know, keep our systems operational. And we want to keep them safe because they do it for us. So when you see that emergency vehicle on the side of the road, or really any vehicle, and it's in Connecticut is the law that this does apply to all vehicles, you got to try to give them some space. So if you can move over safely, then you should. If you can't move over safely, then slow down. Really, you should slow down either way, get to a level below the speed limit. And actually, I'm glad you brought it up, because back on October 1st, a change in the law went into effect. And it's a minor change in the law, but it's an important one, where the slow down, move over law previously applied to two lane roads, which makes sense because you can't move over into oncoming traffic when you are on a lane with or a street with one road, one lane in each direction.
Sure.
But you still want to slow down. There was no law that said you had to do that. So now if you're on a road with one lane in each direction, you see a police officer, you see a tow truck driver that's pulled over on the side of the road, they have their lights flashing. You still have to slow down. You're not obviously expected to move over into oncoming traffic, but you got to slow down to give those folks some more, you know, feeling of safety when they're doing their job. So I think that's an important thing for people to keep in mind. And just anytime you see any car, it could be you, that's your car breaks down, you pull over the shoulder, you're on the side of the road, you want people to not be driving 65, 70 miles an hour right whizzing by you. So do the same for anyone else out there.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll return to talk more with Alex Slatke from AAA Northeast after these words. Stick with us. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. We talk a lot on For the People about Connecticut's housing crisis. And if you'd like to learn more or be part of the conversation, why not come out November 14th to the Darien Nature Center as the Center for Housing Opportunity of Fairfield County presents a 7 p.m. program called Housing Matters, Building Sustainable Communities, where an expert panel will engage you over how we can all build housing while creating a more sustainable Connecticut. Learn more and connect to register by visiting CTHousingOpportunity.org/FCCHO. All right, we're back on the line with Alex Slatke from AAA Northeast. He is the Managing Director of Public and Government Affairs for that organization. If you'd like to learn more, you can go to northeastaaa.com. Another demographic that AAA Northeast is trying to help make feel safer are our aging drivers. AAA, I think, is really one of the only organizations that presents a program that in many cases would qualify an older driver for some sort of a discount on their car insurance program.
That's correct. And we have those programs both in person and online for, you know, whichever option is preferable to you. Mm-hmm. And it's something that's super important for us because we want to make sure everyone out there is safe and mobile. And we know that senior drivers, we've seen the research, we've done our own research. Senior drivers are not more dangerous drivers than other folks. And in fact, in many cases, they're probably safer drivers. But unfortunately, especially when you get to 75 and older, you're more likely to suffer a devastating injury if a crash does occur. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure that everyone out there keeps their car in the best condition that makes them safest, is following all the latest and greatest defensive driving techniques to keep themselves and everyone else on the road safe as much as we possibly can.
Yeah, and it should be said, since AAA also has one of the premier automobile or vehicular, driving safety institute and research organizations, when you say latest, greatest safety training information, it's not just a tagline. I mean, the program that AAA has been offering to senior drivers has been tweaked and tweaked and tweaked as the research and the technology and vehicles and changes in roadway design have all changed. So really, AAA is the place to go. And here in our region, you've heard it hundreds of times on For the People over the many years. Griffin Hospital Hospital in Derby. If you like the camaraderie of a classroom situation, they offer the AAA senior driving program in person several times a year. You can go to griffinhealth.org for that information, or just go to AAA Northeast, which is actually northeastaaa.com, and look up where you can take advantage of one of these programs, and maybe you'll save, you know, $50, $100, couple hundred bucks on your annual car insurance premiums as a result of taking and completing the course. We have also got, speaking of the new law in October for Slow Down, Move Over, there's also a new pilot program out as people start weighing whether or not they might want to take the plunge and purchase an electric vehicle. What's going on with that, Alec?
Yeah, we're seeing, you know, really, I think a couple of trends in terms of electric vehicles. We're seeing more and more people buying EVs. Certainly, it's been the most ever in the United States. It's been our biggest sales of EVs this year. But we're also seeing more reports over the last few months that it wasn't quite what manufacturers were hoping for. And there was some interesting research that just came out a couple of days ago from George Washington University that said people that are buying EVs are driving them less than people that are buying gasoline cars, which, you know, it probably makes sense because, you know, a lot of what we say is, hey, if you want to have one gas car in the house and one EV in the house, you can use your, you know, EV for your commute and local errands. And then if you need to keep the gas car for the road trips, you do that, which is, you know, that's great. And that makes sense from an individual perspective. But I think the big problem is we've got to do a lot more to invest across the country in our charging network. And I know the federal government is certainly doing that. That was one of the big, you know, big achievements from federal legislation over the past few years. And mm-hmm. So Connecticut has been doing that. It's called the NEVI program, and they're investing mainly in corridors that are along interstate highways, long distance travel routes, because they want to facilitate those road trips. And it is possible to take a road trip in an EV, but, you know, we got to be honest and say at this point today, it's not as convenient. It's not going to be as seamless as it is for a gas car.
Sure. It's going
to
take,
so we want to get to a point that it's the same.
It's going to take work, and there may be a few white-knuckle moments in those last few miles as the battery power in the vehicle begins to dip toward empty, right?
Yeah, and I mean, that's what we're here for. I mean, we've got a pilot program where we've got a car that, or I guess, a truck that'll come and help charge you if you run out of charge, if you're an electric vehicle. We've got a pilot here in Connecticut and some other states in our region. And, you know, so far it's going well. Although I will say the main calls that we're getting for electric vehicles are the exact same calls that we're getting for gas powered vehicles. And it's tires. We live in the Northeast, you know, there are going to be potholes and people's tires blow out. They need help changing it. And that's what we're here for. That's our bread and butter. We know how to do that.
Sure.
It's not as big of a factor in the roadside assistance as one might expect.
Sure. From Toyotas to Teslas, the tires are the same. So certainly the maintenance of everything besides the power plant and the powertrain are going to require similar service and care. So and it's very good to hear AAA is on the cutting edge here in Connecticut with this response vehicle to help if you have run out of charge in your EV. So I hope that is successful to the point where we see it replicated across the country and a fantastic new cutting edge benefit of membership of AAA. We can't, we would be remiss if we didn't remind you that AAA is a membership organization. Many benefits to be had if you are a traveler or a commuter or you got kids in college or kids just learning to drive, or you're an elder driver, loads of benefits to consider if you'd like to become a member of AAA. As we get closer to the Thanksgiving holiday and the end of our conversation this morning, Alec, let's just quickly talk about pending Thanksgiving travel, and then we'll wish you a happy Thanksgiving. Till next time.
And thanks. And we know, I mean, it's been a really strong year for travel across the board. You know, we look at Memorial Day and July 4th and Labor Day and all the big holidays. We've seen really strong years, and we're expecting the same thing for Thanksgiving this year. You know, I mean, as with every year, I think a lot of the travel is going to be road trips. People drive in, you know, they could be driving 100 miles away. They could be driving 500, 1,000 miles away. But we're seeing a huge, huge renaissance of that great American road trip as we are emerging from the pandemic over, you know, the last year and couple of years. Mm-hmm. And it's been, you know, it's been a great year from our perspective for the hospitality industry. And there's still, you know, there's still flights. So if you, you know, if you need to book a last minute flight for Thanksgiving, you know, it's certainly possible. Certainly it's going to be a little bit more expensive, but you know, if you want to look for that year end trip instead, there's still time. So we're seeing a lot of interest, and we know gas prices are coming down. So that's going to help with people's interest in road trips. And it's been a really strong year for travel, which is, you know, it excites us because that lets us get to talk to our members about, you know, all the different places they can go. And of course, you know, Thanksgiving is probably the day when people are most excited to go see their family as opposed to exotic destinations. But some folks definitely are taking that family vacation as a whole to some new place.
Yeah, and I guess it should be said, Alec, you know, it's an old adage that a preponderance of traffic accidents and crashes happen in closer proximity to home. So don't think you're not potentially at risk, or you don't need to step up and do all the right things behind the wheel if you're only going across town or across the state to visit someone you love on the Thanksgiving holiday. If anything, it's the time to step up your awareness, especially the closer you get to home where that familiarity factor enters in. So if you got another minute, Alec, I'm sorry, I was remiss in monitoring my list here, because once Thanksgiving is over, certainly winter is going to come. El Nino, regardless, there are a couple things AAA needs folks to know about their winter car care.
It's definitely been unseasonably warm at times this fall, but we know we'd rather get a head start on winter car care prep, and we don't want folks to wait till it's the, you know, the first big cold snap to start doing everything. So certainly the batteries is something that's really important, making sure, you know, that your batteries are in good condition. We offer a battery testing service. So we'll come to you, we'll test your battery. If it needs to be replaced, you know, we'll replace it. If it doesn't, great. Certainly you want to make sure your tires are in good shape, not only the tread, but also checking the tire pressure on a regular basis, because we know it can go down about 1 PSI when you lose about 10 degrees. So if you're going from 60 to 20 over a week, you're going to lose, you know, 4 PSI of pressure. And that's definitely going to make you less safe on the road, less fuel efficient. And of course, just checking up all your fluids, making sure your windshield wipers are not streaky. All making sure the lights, like I said, are in good shape. All of those are super important to do in advance of that first big cold snap. So
yeah,
get out and do it in the next few weeks.
And while we're taping this on Friday, I think people are going to be waking up to this show on the radio on Sunday morning feeling that first cold snap. We're supposed to see temperatures in at least in the northern tier of Connecticut dipping down into the 20s or even below. So if your tire pressure is already low, then you're going to have issues if it gets much colder. So always fantastic advice from our friends at AAA Northeast. So pleased to have Alec Slatke as our new resource in that department. He's Managing Director for Public and Government Affairs for AAA Northeast. Once again, if you'd like to visit them and find out everything they have to offer, including some incredible membership benefits, please go to northeast.aaa.com. Alec, happy Thanksgiving, happy holidays, and we'll talk to you again in the mid to late winter as we start heading into spring. So appreciate your time. Thank you. We're going to wrap up our show this morning celebrating the opening of the Danbury Regional Food Pharmacy by replaying the second part of a two-part series we aired in the spring, focusing on this effort by United Way of Western Connecticut and Nuvance Health to open a community-based site designed to increase access to and consumption of healthful foods for those individuals across the region diagnosed with obesity, heart disease, diabetes, and or hypertension. So check it out. And we're pleased to now chat with somebody else who was fundamentally involved with this project to talk a little bit more about its implications and its potential for significantly enhancing public health throughout the greater Danbury region. Dr. Brenda Ayers is with Nuvance Health. She's a physician and director of health equity for Nuvance Health, as well as a practicing internist. So Dr. Ayers, thank you for joining us. We've got about 10 or 12 minutes to chat a little bit about your background and involvement in this project. How did you first hear about the idea of developing not just a food organization that would help sustain folks in Greater Danbury, but one that is targeting individuals who may be able to utilize a better diet and food intake to address their own health issues?
Thank you for this opportunity to share what we've been doing with our collaboration with United Way and Nuvance, as well as the Connecticut Institute for Communities in Danbury. I will say that this work at Nuvance actually started in its infancy several years back. Prior to COVID, we were looking at assessments of our communities and understanding this. What the data were showing us was that we have this interplay between food insecurity and nutrition insecurity, as well as chronic disease with hypertension and diabetes and obesity in our communities. And so we started to think about what it would mean to bring a food as medicine program to our patients in Nuvance. That work, unfortunately, got waylaid by COVID for a few years, which only actually exacerbated the situation, as I'm sure many people are aware. That the rates of food insecurity, nutrition insecurity, went up during the pandemic. The reliance on food banks went up all over the country. And so after we sort of settled into the steady state that we're in now with the pandemic, it became very clear to us that we needed to get back to the business of providing access to healthy, nutritious foods for our patients in order to combat these chronic diseases that face our communities.
And perhaps even though the delay in hitting the ground running due to the distraction and all of the resources that had to be put toward COVID at Nuvance, it did also, you know, as time passed, created an opportunity that our U.S. Representatives in Washington took advantage of to deliver over $1 million to get this food pharmacy started. How critical was that funding in being able to maybe, if not, you know, bridge the gap in terms of the amount of mitigation you may have done to public health concerns? But I mean, it must have definitively shortened the trip between the two points of idea and completion of the project, or at least the delivery of the project.
Yes, absolutely. Those congressional dollars were mission critical. I mean, without that money, we would not be able to fund the program as it is now in Danbury. So the entire plan was predicated on the United Way and Nuvance collaborating to receive this money. And so, it is so interesting that we have recognized this interplay, this connection between being able to have consistent access to healthy foods and your overall health outcomes, right? Your ability to deal with these chronic diseases, treat them, and even in some cases maybe prevent them. But where we have a huge opportunity is on a federal level, I would say, is supplying the consistent funds that are needed to keep these programs alive and going, and even to start them in the communities where they're needed the most.
Hmm. Well, unlike a medical prescription, would you say that it is more likely for individuals to fall back on the easiest to obtain food for their diet, food that may be, fast food or food that may be less healthy or even unhealthy because they don't have that kind of consistent and welcoming environment where the best choices of food are available for them whenever they need it?
I think that's part of it. I do. I think that's a big part of it. And what you're speaking to is access, right? Yeah. And I think that being able to provide the access to good choices is a good thing and will lead to people being able to make better choices. And then the idea is that down the road, this affects outcomes with disease. But there's another piece to that as well, right? So you can have a Whole Foods, at the corner of Main Street and Danbury that has all of those healthy choices, organic choices, locally grown things, absolutely. But if people can't afford those choices, they will still fall back on what they can afford. And if they have to consistently choose between, well, do I pay my electric bill today, or do I buy my medication today, or do I buy this food that is nutritious and probably better for me, which am I going to choose? And so I think that there is I think inherent in this whole process is that we have to look at it from all of the different drivers that people face that affect their health outcomes. And certainly access is one of them for sure, but also being able to afford good nutritious foods is a huge role. And so if someone has to choose between, feeding a family of four and they have to pay the rent where that family has to live and the electric bill, and what they have left over, they can't afford to buy food at Whole Foods, then they're going to go to McDonald's or Burger King down the street.
I get it. Yeah. Well, we heard from United Way of Western Connecticut President Isabel Almeida last week a little bit about the nuts and bolts of the program, but a huge component of that in addressing just what you're talking about is the $10 per week benefit that comes with being accepted in the program. But it's fascinating because food pharmacy with an FARM really wraps things up very appropriately, because a lot of this involves very fresh food that is also supporting our local and regional agricultural partners. But it is also literally presenting individuals who are with the program a prescription that is filled at the food pharmacy, right?
Absolutely. So what we are doing is, again, addressing this intersection between food and nutrition insecurity and chronic diseases like hypertension, diabetes, obesity, high cholesterol, heart disease, all of these nutrition-sensitive diagnoses that evidence shows that when people have access to the proper nutritious foods that they need, these diseases can be better controlled and outcomes for patients can be better. Yeah. And so what we have decided to do was to screen people, our patients, for food insecurity and hypertension. So those patients who have hypertension and screen positive for food insecurity will receive a prescription to our food pharmacy that they will then take over to the food pharmacy, work with a registered dietitian nutritionist on what best suits their diagnosis with regards to food choices. And so there's going to be a lot of education for folks coming through who maybe don't necessarily understand that connection between what they're eating, how they're preparing their food on a consistent basis, and the chronic disease that they have, in this case, hypertension.
Yeah, it's also, I was going to say, it's also going to give people, those qualified participants, an opportunity to have eyes on them from a community health worker or even a social worker who would be able to see if there is an appearance of new health concerns or fallbacks in the current condition of the patient. And we can't really let you go without reminding folks that UConn Extension is also involved, because it's not just accessing that great food, that fresh farm fare, but also learning how to best prepare it and cook it so it not only is good for you, but it tastes great and the kids will eat it too. So
absolutely, not only is it good for you, it tastes great, but it's going, the idea, and thank you for calling attention to this this critical piece and how we prepare our foods, right?
Yeah.
To do it in a way that is culturally appropriate, that people respond to, so that if you have your favorite cultural dish, to learn how to prepare that in a way that is more healthy and more in tune with the diagnosis of hypertension, for instance, that you have, I think that that's a win. That's a win all the way around, because not only are you you're educating people, but you're also giving them, you're empowering them, right, in a way that is culturally sensitive to their needs. So we're all very, very excited about it.
The second part of our look at this innovative Danbury Regional Food Pharmacy has brought the voice of Dr. Brenda Ayers to the award-winning For the People. She is a physician and director of health equity for New Vance Health and a practicing internist. If you'd like to learn more about this program, or maybe even think about some way to bring it to your community, go to uwwesternct.org/food-pharmacy. That's with an FARMACY, uwwesternct.org/food-pharmacy. Dr. Ayers, in the meantime, thank you for your great work, and we'll be talking to you again soon. And we'll be talking. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.